Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
So we're really excited today. We have an amazing author. Her name is Yael Cohen, and she's the author of We Killed, The Rise of Women in Comedy, A Very Oral History. Hey, hey. So thanks for coming to the show today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Awesome. So this is the kind of, I know you can't judge a book by its cover, but I do love
yes.
the cover of
yeah,
your
oh,
book.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, thank you.
It's very attractive. And it's got how many people on the cover there? 16?
16.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people on the cover.
And you have hard hitters here, too. I mean, it's not just
Carol Burnett, who I love.
Right. Yeah.
Actually, I love them all. I'm
Phyllis
just happy
Diller,
about Carol Burnett. Fey.
Did you talk to Phyllis Diller?
I did speak to Phyllis Diller. I spoke to her a few times.
Please tell us about that, because I'm fascinated by her.
It's so it's funny because, you know, Phyllis Diller was one of those people who I interviewed who is obviously a legend
yeah.
and,
you
know,
yeah,
very
yeah.
important pivotal figure in comedy. But at the time, I wasn't sure if people, you know, she was still alive, obviously, and I wasn't sure if people were going to be so interested in Phyllis Diller, and I cannot tell you
wow.
the number of questions I get about Phyllis Diller, which is it's refreshing and it's surprising and it's great,
yeah.
but I don't know if it's because she passed on, so now people are very aware of her.
Oh, yeah.
Or what, but during the reporting of the book, she was, people only, you know, mentioned her a few times. Like, she was not one of the main people in or one of the main comedians in people's minds. So
really?
It's nice.
I love Phyllis. I mean, obviously,
you do. When I was young, too, I mean, she was one of the first female stand-ups that I ever saw. Her
Same
and
here.
Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
That was it.
There were stand-ups before Phyllis Diller, but, she really came of age during the age of television. You
yeah.
know, television's not that old, and television really gave us, you know, a national platform for a lot of these comics. I mean, there were records,
right.
but you know, television really kind of changes the game, especially because you see her and her look was so important. So she wasn't the first female stand-up, but she did gain a certain kind of mass mainstream appeal most of the stand-ups who came before her didn't have.
Wow.
I mean, you definitely had people like Moms Mabley, but she
yeah.
was more underground. You
right.
know,
right.
she didn't really. I don't think she appeared on Ed Sullivan until, like, the set. I think I could be wrong here, but I think it was, like, the 19th set. Till the end of
yeah.
her career. I mean, she had already, I mean, she was, you know,
was
way
huge.
Beyond.
She had many albums.
Yeah,
that was,
yeah.
But her work was a little more, a lot of her work was very risque.
Right, it was
and
very
And didn't have
risque.
A place on TV,
right.
even
so
though she was
well-known really,
on the circuit.
Exactly.
You know?
So you did the circuit, and then if you got on TV, and then there were recordings. There were,
and there were
record
recordings.
Yeah.
And I was focused mainly on comedians in mainstream American
mm-hmm.
culture and the
mm-hmm.
emergence of women into the mainstream, because you're always going to have women on the, you know, on the in the underground, on the fringes. But, you know, the emergence of women in comedy into the mainstream was really the story that I was focused on.
Interesting.
And,
in the book.
And you interviewed, how many women in ballpark? I mean, how many people ballpark?
I interviewed,
some men too?
Yeah, I interviewed 200, like a little over 200. And
200
then,
over
yeah.
like four years or 2 years?
Yeah, over three and a half, 4 years. And I think 150 made it into the book. Some people were cut,
okay.
unfortunately.
Well, there's only so much room. I mean, I think
exactly.
you did a really good job of getting a lot of people
right,
in this
right,
book.
Right.
People, if you get this book, it's a nice, thick book. But obviously, at a certain point, you have to edit yourself.
Right, and
you
want to and you kind of want to make a coherent story, and you don't
mm-hmm.
want to kind of add random stuff in just for the sake of adding it. And then, you know, as you're kind of searching for the story, because you do the interviews and, you know, the way I organized it was basically according to comedy scene. So
yeah.
comedians are usually in a clique, they're in a group. And then that group is what becomes the dominant form of comedy for a particular era. So
isn't
I focused on that. Yeah.
And your narrative style, you say you give some shout out to Jeffrey Sweet for Something
oh, yeah.
Wonderful and Right Away.
We
he's
had
a
him
friend.
On our show.
He's on,
well,
it's on our show
oh,
too.
Yeah.
He's
okay.
a friend of Hey You Know It. Yeah,
we are very highbrow here at Hey You Know It. We have all the
that,
great.
That
stuff.
Is very Jeffrey Sweet's very highbrow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That is a book that you know is for people who are very interested in
yeah.
comedy.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, what gave you the idea to write this book? What motivated you to write this?
Well, I was an associate editor at Marie Claire
mm-hmm.
magazine, and I think at the time, you know, at first there was an article that Christopher Hitchens wrote, you know, that we know has been dissected over and over
again.
I'm
glad he wrote that because it has gotten a lot of the balls rolling, so to speak, in the conversation.
So Christopher Hitchens, he basically said women aren't funny because we're biologically not programmed to be funny because we don't need to be. Yeah.
Well, right, we don't need to be, and also because we're mothers, because we give birth, we understand we have a more profound understanding of life, so we don't see the ugliness. Like, it was something like that. It was something very weird,
very creative.
As a woman, I feel comedy has saved my ass personally so many times.
Absolutely.
Growing up, you know, in awkward situations, if you don't fit in, what's better than comedy, male or female? It can help you out. That's a ridiculous statement. Mm-hmm.
It was a crazy statement. However, just going to your point, I do. At the end of the day, I think it actually worked in women's favor because that he was merely expressing a view that a lot of people have and still have that they're now, you know, people are savvy enough to know that they shouldn't necessarily say it.
But he was not only was he expressing the view, as you say, but he was trying to make some kind of scientific argument for
it. Well, I mean, that was crazy.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
The view itself is crazy, but I think expressing the view, he was just, you know, basically, you know, saying like, look, people still think this, essentially. I mean, at the end of the day, the big takeaway is there are people who still think this, it is still difficult for women who work in comedy.
Right.
Yes.
And so I think there was a takeaway in that. So in terms of the article, it wasn't that article that initially made me want to do I did a piece first and then the book. It was the follow up article because when I read that piece initially, I really didn't realize that people walked around saying women weren't funny.
Oh, no.
I did not grow.
I've been doing comedy for over 10 years.
Jaquetta does stand-up. We both do improv, sketch. We've done a lot of different
one-person shows.
Shows and things like that. So we both have had our experiences
with
it.
Yeah, it's hard out there for a pimp. It really is. And I'm not a person to complain about being a woman or being African-American or any of these things. But people, you know, on the show, they're like, oh, we'll put one woman in.
Yeah.
One?
Right.
So then you have to compete with all the other women. You can't really compete.
Right.
But do you know what I mean? You're put in that kind of situation.
Right.
I've heard male comics bomb on stage and watch a woman and then make a comment, she's not funny. I'm like, people threw banana peels at your son. You know?
Right.
Like, I've been hearing it ever since I started doing comedy.
Right.
I've always heard it. I've never stopped hearing it.
Right, you know? But I did not perform comedy myself.
Oh, okay.
So I did not. So, you know, when you're not in the world and you kind of, you know, I mean, not that people don't say it in New York, but I grew up in New York. I went to an arts high school. I just don't, and the people I mean, people always say this, but the people I knew, the women were very funny. It just, it wasn't, and the men didn't necessarily walk around thinking that, or at least saying it.
Maybe
they
just weren't intimidated by it.
Yeah.
Right.
Or they felt good about what they were doing.
Exactly.
Unlike in comedy for men.
Yeah.
Yes. It's a woman. Look, women aren't funny. That's why I'm not doing well.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know. So it was really more though the response the next year Vanity Fair came out with their response to the piece. Mm-hmm. And I think when I read that, I was kind of like, ooh, I still want to know more.
Yeah.
And then I was talking to my editor at the time, my magazine editor, and we had said, you know, why not call up some of these women and find out what the experience was, what their experience was in comedy. And so it started from there. And then when I wrote the article, you know, you're limited in a magazine how much you could write.
Yeah.
I felt like there was so much that I left on the cutting room floor and ideas that I didn't have room to explore that I wanted to explore.
Too bad it wasn't the Atlantic because they let people go on.
They
get the full.
I know.
Yes.
So who didn't talk?
No, I mean, you can see in the book who's not in there.
Well, I mean, we know you cut some, so I don't know
Know. Well, I did not cut people like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, who are kind of, my understanding is that they're tired of talking about it, that they feel like they've said what they have to say on the subject.
That's unfortunate because not everybody's heard it. I understand what they're saying, but everybody needs to hear that consistently because when they don't hear it for a year or two, then they forget about it. I guarantee you, just that people were sparked about this Hitchens article, that article will come out again in another 5 years.
Yeah, they're always, there's
always
people
ask me that all the time. Right. Have we heard the end of Women Aren't Funny? And I always say, no. It's good. You know, you're going to, it comes in waves and eventually there's going to be a lull.
And
you'll
exactly.
Again.
And
I
then mean, we'll throw your book right in their face 5 years from now.
But you know, there are very few books about women in comedy. The books that I have seen tend to be, you know, biographies of specific women.
I like Sandra Bernhard's book. I think it's called Not a Pretty Lady.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Very good. So, yeah, most of the things that I've read about women in comedy have not been anthologies
or histories. Right, they're not. And this was less, you know, biographies of specific women than it was about the collective experience of women in comedy. So, and there are very few books that I'll be honest, I didn't see any. I mean, there were biographies. Again, right. But that was it.
I liked how you chronicled the periods in history and what really was the main focus at different times, like going to those more of the cabaret style clubs back in the 50s, and then how then stand up emerged as the main focus, and then how it went into improvisation.
Right. I mean, the way I organized it was basically in that way was to look at the comedy movements, and I started in the 50s. You know, one, because it's an oral history, so you need people who are alive to talk.
Around, yeah.
But also, you know, the 50s is really the birth of modern stand-up. It's really, and the birth of modern sketch. I mean, that the two forms that we experience comedy the most is basically through stand-up and sketch. That's where, you know, comedy talent comes from. We don't really do, you know, that kind of song and dance Broadway show type of variety.
Carol Burnett. Well, I was watching some old clips because they're selling collections now on DVD. So every time I'm at the gym, that's what's being sold. Right. I forgot they used to have large scale numbers on that show, and I didn't think that was out of place for a comedy show. I thought, okay, we've had some sketches. A guy has ripped a shirt off, usually Burt Reynolds. Now we've seen Steve Martin. Now we're gonna see like 20 people doing a big production. So you're right, that's gone.
Right, that's not we don't, the only variety show that really exists anymore on network TV is SNL. And SNL,
they don't dance.
You know, they do some song, but it's not in the same, it's not like song and dance.
Yeah.
I mean, these are not musicians, you know, funny musicians.
I feel like that's more, the song and dance thing is more an animation though, for obvious reasons.
Right.
So your Family Guy, South Park, those kind of shows can do the animation.
Because
you need a triple threat.
Right.
I don't know how many people coming out of sketch and stand-up are ready for that.
Right. Dance, I mean, Carol Burnett was really,
She was the last package.
And she was the last one. There weren't no variety. I mean, they tried with Sonny and Cher, but they weren't comedians.
No. Right. No,
I mean, they tried it with they tried it with musicians, but they didn't, you know, with comedians, it was over. I mean, you know, SNL came in, and then that kind of changed the landscape for good, which is, and what's funny about Carol Burnett is you talk to people like, Lily Tomlin or certain people of that era where they kind of sometimes snubbed their nose at that broad kind of humor, and the way humor's gone now, they're kind of like, oh, you know, at the time I hated the laugh track, but now sometimes I watch TV and all I can think is, where's the audience laugh? You know, that they miss that same, they miss some of
those
cues. Yeah, those cues. And when I was talking to Jane Wagner, who is Lily Tomlin's partner in life and in comedy, she was saying that, when they were making their specials, that they had this kind of snobism about what they wanted in humor, that now when they look at the comedy landscape on TV, they kind of miss.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And I had read a lot about Saturday Night Live and how they would say, no, that's how Carol Burnett did it. We're not going to break during sketches. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do her style. And they purposefully stepped away from that format. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, it was a new voice. It was a new voice. I mean, it was a shift. I mean, a lot of the chapters deal with the 1970s because the 1970s brought, it was a women's movement, so it brought a lot of change with it.
Carol Burnett,
Saturday. Oh, the 1970s.
The
1970s women's movement. I mean, you really see a shift in the number of women doing comedy, the tone of women doing comedy. I mean, there was really a notice at what kind of comedy was acceptable on television, the changes in sitcom, and the emergence of the female writer in sitcoms. Mm. I mean, before the 1970s, you had one here and there, always only one in a writer's room. You know, they had different idea of a writer's room, but still only, your show of shows had one woman writer. I think I Love Lucy had one female writer, but the 1970s with Mary Tyler Moore, you start seeing a lot more names showing up for women who were writing on these programs, and you know, creating programs. They weren't just writing them. They were creating. What you see through the 1980s.
In terms of Mary Tyler Moore, growing up as a young feminist and someone interested in comedy, watching that show, it never registered to me that she was a comedian. Per se. I mean? Right. I saw her in a different way. I saw her through this kind of
she's an entertainer,
right. And she's putting out this amazing product.
Right.
You know, she's got Rhoda, she's got all these things going on. I like that your book encompasses all types of comedic actors.
Well, she,
you know, as well as stand ups.
Yeah, right. She was an actress. I don't know that she went out to be a comedian. It was really her supporting cast, which was very comedy focused, and she herself saw herself as the as a straight man to all these very funny people.
The wackiness.
Yeah,
and a lot of sitcoms have that model today. I mean, you know, Roseanne was a comedian, but John Goodman was not a comedian.
Not at all.
and neither were the people who played his kids.
Yeah. They were all serious actors, like Laurie, like the other people in the show, Laurie Metcalf. They were all very serious actors. And not that Roseanne isn't serious, but I remember her as a stand-up because I saw her first. Right. As doing stand-up. And then when she got a show, I was like, oh, this is cool. This is a female stand-up getting a show. Let's see how this goes.
Oh, so you remember Roseanne from back in the day.
Yeah, we remember. Old. It was the stand-up comedians. That was the thing. You had to get your sitcom. You had to get on Johnny Carson.
We watched Seinfeld
We watched
But you had seen Roseanne live before she was on the show?
I had seen her on, I think, HBO.
Oh, on HBO. Okay.
So I remember in the 80s, everything was about stand-up. There was the brick wall, the mic.
And everybody was getting up to do it. And the whole boom of all the comedy clubs that just sprung up out of nowhere.
And then everyone got the TV, and it was kind of, for me, felt like a golden age of that.
Right.
And then it started kind of evolving into other things. Right. Once you've given everyone a show,
what are you gonna do?
Where do you go?
Right.
And it also kind of made it so that a lot of comics just wanted to get through the comedy club thing to get a show.
Right.
For women, that didn't always pan out the same way.
No, women had a very hard time getting shows.
Yeah, and it did something to comedy, too, because you had to come up with, like, a shticky kind of...
Yeah. Right. A premise that would follow through.
Yeah, that your character, that you as a stand-up was attached to, so you could get the show.
Like, but also, we watched, and I don't know if you did as well, Katie, we watched SNL, all of those women, and then I'm like, where's their film? Right. I remember being, you know, in my teens and being like, why didn't Jane Curtin have any more?
Right.
You know, why weren't there more films coming out of it? Every film you see
is so what's the problem here?
What's the deal?
All right, so the question in the book is, why do people think women aren't funny? What's the problem with these guys?
Break it down for us.
We have our own ideas too, but we'd like to hear.
We know you wrote a book.
I mean, I think a lot of it is very complex. I think a lot of it's very complex. I don't think it's just that network executives didn't think women were funny. I think that they just reduced it to, is this someone I want to look at on the screen? And I think that, you know, even when Roseanne got her...
Yes, exactly.
The nerve.
But even when Roseanne got
Kevin James.
Right. Yes. Is Kevin James... Who's the one who was married to Courtney Thorne-Smith in the show? Which show is that?
Oh, that's Jim Belushi. Right. John Belushi's brother.
Was it Jim Belushi with Courtney?
It was A. Belushi.
It was Jim Belushi, the brother. And, you know, and John Belushi was famous for saying that women weren't funny.
Right, yeah, mm-hmm. He said
so
it
there
too.
You go. Yeah.
It's fantastic. I know that Keenan Ivory Wayans, I've read things about him saying that women aren't funny.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and neither are your films. So how's that? How's that working out for you?
That was like Adam, when you read that Adam Carolla interview in the New York Post when he said women aren't funny, he does this whole thing about how women aren't funny, but then he has like this weird relationship with his mom where his mom doesn't think he's basically this after he describes it. It's like, well, basically your mother doesn't think you're funny because she won't watch any of his stuff. It was a very funny quote where you're kind of like, oh, so your mom doesn't think you're funny.
That sounds like the nexus of the problem right there.
Yeah. I mean,
well,
women aren't
funny because his mom can't recognize how humorous he is.
Right.
She just doesn't get it.
I think that the women aren't funny comes from a few things. I think it comes from in the profession of comedy, there are fewer women who go out to be professional comedians. Now, that, you know, for whatever reason that is, it doesn't mean they're not funny. They could be funny in their house.
It's the one part I've seen a lot of female comics drop out of it because of the scene.
Right.
The stand-up scene is something that's very different boys from club. The other.
Right. Well, I did divide the book by stand-up and sketch because they really are different art forms, and I think that the barriers to one, I think the barriers to stand-up are very different to the barriers of sketch. And one of them is, in terms of stand-up, you're going out there and basically saying this stuff as yourself. So if you say something that people find unappealing or that's kind of like, you're saying that as yourself. You can't then go out on, you know, The Tonight Show and say like, oh, but you know, that was just my character. You know, that wasn't me. I just play an obnoxious person. I'm not actually obnoxious. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that you're doing that as a person versus a character is adds a little more danger to it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. In stand-up than it does in sketch. Because sketch, you know, you can then, you know, put on a pretty dress, you know, doll yourself up and say like, you know, I played that ugly character, but I am not that ugly. Where your persona in stand-up is basically what your persona is supposed to be in real life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you're selling something that's different. And I think that creates different barriers.
Because
that's you also have different barriers in media about, you know, what women what can, you can and be, can't say. Mm-hmm.
You have to be, I went to a seminar about Holly Mandel. She does a lot with sketch and stand-up about the idea of the good woman. The good girl.
Mm-hmm.
So by when you go up there and you do the same type of stand up that the boys do, and you're perceived as vulgar, then it's like that's not what we want. Nobody wants to look at that,
right?
You know, and then you're kind of done. Mm-hmm. That's why I find Roseanne's career so fascinating, because her stand up was not sugarcoating anything,
And also, but they weren't intimidated by her look too, because she wasn't the picture of the standard of beauty that we have in our society.
Yeah.
So they kind of accepted that from somebody who was overweight and maybe dressed a little bit differently.
And the class issue also.
Yeah. Right.
But they had reservations. I mean, when I did interviews for the book, I mean, the network did have reservations about putting her on the air, and not just her, but just the whole look of that, of her home, not, you know, looking schlubby. And I think, you know, they were pleasantly surprised at the end of the day that the show did really well.
I'm
and
amazed
it's obviously
that they,
a memorable show.
That they let it go on. That they let it start in the first place. I love the show.
Right. Yeah,
but all of those issues that you're talking about, an older woman, you know, the class issue, looking at blue-collar people.
Well, that was also, though, a very different time in television. At that time, cable had not taken off in the way just yet. And I think I had a whole chapter on this, but it was kind of difficult to do in an oral history.
Oh, you heard it here, folks. This is the
lost chapter.
Yeah.
But basically, you know, there were a lot of changes in the television business at, you know, between the 80s and the 90s. And, you know, Fox was not a network pre-1980. I mean, they launched in 1980?
I remember. Married with Children.
Right, Married with Children.
Oh, my God.
And they launched their network, which I think is very interesting. They launched their network with Joan Rivers as the anchor program of their network. So their first show that they signed.
I don't even remember.
I remember that.
The first show that they signed, that they made the big announcement that they were going to start a new network, Fox, was the Late Show starring Joan Rivers. Either the Late Show or the something.
The Tonight Show, Johnny.
It was to compete with the Tonight Show.
Right.
And this is why he never talked to her again, was he felt betrayed by this. But, you know, from the other side of it, they launched this network with Joan Rivers.
As a centerpiece.
Now, for various reasons that I think has to do with, you know, behind the scenes politics.
I heard it was torpedoed left, right, and center.
Well,
but not
I,
from inside the network. I'll put it that way.
Who did you hear it was torpedoed from?
By Johnny Carson.
Yeah, Johnny Carson.
That he ruined that program?
That he tried to ruin her.
No. Yeah. He.
And the program was collateral.
I mean, she says that she was competing with him, so of course he's going to try and compete back,
but I think there were behind the scenes
troubles with that show that, you know, they wanted to fire her husband. She didn't want him to fire them. So, you know, I think that there were troubles with him running the show. So Fox basically kind of broke this whole idea that there are only three networks.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that changed
the business. And even less so, because then you have four networks. But then after that, you then have HBO.
Yeah.
And then you start to get even more cable channels. And by the 90s, you have the bleeding of audiences away from the networks, and they didn't have the same hold on the audience. So because of that, they were trying to hold on to their audience. And that's why you see the look change. I mean, I think there was a huge change when they brought over, you know, before Friends came on TV, you had Roseanne, you know, you had Seinfeld, you had Golden Girls, you had Designing Women. I mean, Golden Girls is still very popular, though.
Right. I know many guys in their 20s who are really into Golden Girls.
I mean, Golden Girls is a great show, but nothing wrong with Golden Girls. The women on those shows, you know, depending on the show, there were attractive women on TV naturally, but they weren't hot in the same way that when you look at network TV now. I mean, there are like good-looking young people on TV now,
and scantily clad,
and even Mary Tyler Moore. I mean, Mary Tyler Moore was a very good-looking woman. Rhoda was a good-looking woman, but she was not heavy by any stretch of the imagination. No. But she was not like super skinny, hot sort of
right.
Super skinny. She was normal women. Yeah. You know, Cloris Leachman, you had Betty White. I mean, that was all on one show. Maude was like, you know, a 50-year-old character, very funny.
All these people that we're talking about, the one thing that they have in common is they had very strong characters that they established for themselves. It was the character that you look for. You know, and Roseanne, I watched it again, and I said, geez, you know, it's a very specific person that this is coming from, and that's why it's funny.
But in the 90s, when they were losing audiences, they basically, advertisers wanted a way that they were going to reach basically young men 18 to 49 who they were losing to cable.
Mm-hmm.
And so, they, you know, how do you do that? You get young, attractive women on TV, and Friends, you know, was a very successful show.
I missed that, I have to say. As African American, we don't get it.
I mean, I liked it.
I did like it. I also missed it from the beginning. I'm not saying it's not funny, but I'm just like, okay, it's a bunch of people.
Well, it wasn't Friends that was the problem specifically, but it was the attempt to recreate Friends and to recreate the magic that was happening on Friends. Yeah. Instead of saying like, okay, this was a great show, let's do something else. It was the attempt to
groups of people that look good. We have to do more shows with them.
Right.
And they're missing the point.
And that change. And so I think we feel that those effects to this day. And for the most part, sitcom is still a network medium. I mean, they have sitcoms on other channels. I mean, you know, Sex and the City, Girls.
But I think those are different types of Shameless, these kind of shows. Breaking Bad, because that's a 1 hour, but those are different.
They're different kinds of shows. Yeah. The sitcom, in the way that we, I think, grow up thinking about the sitcom, is still a network. I mean, I think USA tried to do a sitcom. I think Lifetime's tried. But I don't know that people are watching them. They certainly don't talk about them in the way that they talk about the network sitcoms. So I think, you know, and they have a lot of sitcoms that don't work. So I think there's like the constant trying to figure it out. And obviously they keep them young. I mean, it would be great to see a Golden Girls again.
Yeah.
Or, you know, not that show, but
I mean, that's very interesting to me. That's a situation, the Golden Girls, that is not a part of my life. But it's fascinating that there are four older women living in this community, and it's still shenanigans.
Right.
You know, I mean, I think that's what's
the
great
thing
about
that crazy
show.
About that show, though, is I think they're supposed to be like 50.
Really?
Yeah. They are not supposed to be 70 years old.
So they're in an assisted living community, or they're like
no,
an
they
active
just live in
living
Florida.
Community?
I think they just live
I thought
in
they
Florida.
Were in a retirement community.
Were they? They might have been in a
I don't
retirement.
Know.
You know,
it's Florida,
I'm not
though,
100%.
So.
I don't think they really address
it. I don't think
really
they really
say,
address it,
it
but they
have
are
to
not.
Me, but it's Florida.
The network, I think, wanted 40-year-old women. She gave them 50-year-old women that we now watch and think they're 70-year-old women because 50-year-old women don't look like that.
No, and because they used to do the makeup and the clothing for them, for their characters.
Right.
We're not reading as that age. I love that show, though. You would never see something like that now.
No, it was a great show. And people loved it. Young men loved it. Young women loved it. But, you know, I guess it's risky to do a show like that. I mean, I guess that's, you know, you know, trying to attract a certain kind of audience, and that just creates a certain, dilemma.
I think in a way, though,
and they're never going to have the same numbers that they had at
because there's too much segmentation in the market.
Right.
But I think there's no, I mean, it's no riskier than some of the horrible things that, you know, we see ads for, and then they don't even get to be on TV.
Mm-hmm. But even,
you know, Pepper Dennis.
It's funny because I've talked about this with my husband, where we talk about, when you look at sitcoms now, that they all pretty much look the same.
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, because I was a kid in the 80s and the 90s, they didn't. We had The Cosby Show, we had Roseanne, we had Family Ties.
Yeah. I love those shows.
And you had
and
shows,
and we had The Hogan
though,
Family with Jason Bateman.
For a minute, yeah. Short-lived
sitcoms. But you had white families, you had black families. All right, I think you just had the... I don't know if you had Asian... You had with American Girl,
But I remember that being
short-lived.
But
it did feel like when I think back on shows that I watched as a kid, I feel like I was watching a more diverse grouping
than
of
now.
Shows
that,
than
that's
now.
A possibility. I mean, there are some, when the new shows come out, there are some networks that I'm like, you're just not having any diversity at all.
Right.
Like you've either put your show in a time period where there can't be diversity or in a location where there can't, like there's always some reason why.
Right.
Suburgatory is the only show that I've seen recently that I noticed has a kind of a diverse cast to it. I saw some black people on there. I saw an Asian person.
She saw them, and it was fleeting, but they were there.
I believe they were in the storyline.
Right.
And it wasn't like that it was about them being black.
Right,
it was like, here's some...
Right. Well, you have that in Happy Endings as a character.
Yeah.
But in terms of, like, having, like, a whole, you know, like, a African-American family,
no.
I mean, you don't have that anymore.
Well, now that we have...
Although there's a young comedian right now who got a program on ABC, Issa Rae.
Really? Yes. I used to watch her web series.
Her web series is very,
very
funny.
Awkward Black Girl. I didn't know that's how you say... Her name's Issa. That's how you say it? Issa Rae. I don't know. I'm going with what you said.
We're
going
to say Issa.
I think it's Issa Rae.
She's very funny. I read some... her first interviews to get her show, they wanted to do Awkward Black Girl, which is about, you know, an average African-American girl who's just very awkward. She's dark or medium skin, short Afro hair. So when she went to the network, the first thing they said is, well, can we get someone with straight hair who's lighter skinned? And she's like, but the character is about the fact that this woman is just solidly a regular, like me, just an African-American.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing special, nothing fancy.
Right.
So hopefully she's obviously gotten past that.
You're
right.
Special. Well, I think her show is about, it's called like something with L.A. dudes.
Oh, really?
So, I mean, we'll see. I hope it's good.
It's going to have to be diverse.
Awkward Black Girl is very funny.
It's so funny.
And it's very diverse. I mean, there's like...
My question is, for something like Awkward Black Girl, it was so huge and it was going on for such a long time. I'm like, why is she not getting something? I feel like if she'd been like Mark Duplass, you know, the guys who were on The League, they made a crappy film like 10 years ago.
Well, with her, I mean, there were certainly barriers for women getting sitcoms before that, like 2000, that post-Bridesmaids, 2011, where suddenly everybody wanted women.
Yeah, ensemble pieces.
We're more than half the population.
And what's funny is when you speak to a lot of the comics before that period, because I was working on the book before that movie came out, and when you spoke to people before that period, the comment was like, oh, I go into meetings with executives and they always make comments like, oh, we don't want shows with women right now. We're not interested in women. Bridesmaids came out, suddenly it was like, you know,
everyone,
you know, there were all these women.
I don't understand that mentality at all, but fine. It's like all of a sudden, it's a great movie, but it's like then they realize, wait, people might want to look at women.
Right.
Being funny.
Right.
Really? Really, guys?
You know, and I think they go with a lot of assumptions that men aren't watching certain things. And you know, it's funny because they always talk about, you know, romantic comedies are for men and, I mean, are for women and men aren't interested
in them.
I know so many men who love romantic comedies, but they're
not
going to say it in a poll. I mean, they're not like...
Because they're a fun, light story.
They're fun, light stories.
If they do go see it and they have a girlfriend, they could be like, she wanted to see it.
Right. Exactly.
It's their guilty pleasure.
Yeah.
It's like,
and you know, maybe you're not going to get like a group of guys going to see the romantic comedy together, but there are plenty of men who are going to still go see these movies.
Especially on the DL. Yeah. I imagine that's like a slip out of work at 2 p.m., catch a quick Kate Hudson movie, and then back to
Right.
You're listening to Hey You Know It with Jaquetta Sotmari and
Katie Kazmir.
We're telling you how it is and how it should be. So I wanted to ask you, because this is so thoroughly researched and you're going through the decades chronologically, can you give us a prediction? Or tell us what you see, what the shift is now, in your opinion. Where it's going, what are some positives, what are some negatives? I could make that question a lot longer, but I'm not going to.
I mean, I think right now the question isn't, are women funny? I mean, I think that it's pretty much hands down people really, you know, it's I think that question is at least for the time being.
It'll be back, and I'll give them your book.
It's
going to
be back because it's gone through.
Right,
gone
but I
through,
think the question now is...
Jerry Lewis to John Belushi to... Right. Now,
Christopher
Hitchens, and then it's just going to keep going on and on. So I want to hear your prediction, but I also want to know, like, I want to talk about why it exists.
Because they hate their mamas.
Okay. I think it exists. Do you want me to say why I think it exists?
Well,
or
I wanna
I'm going to answer.
I
want to
hear your prediction.
I think the question is, it's not are they funny, it's will they make money? And I think that, you know, bottom line, if the networks are making money or the studios are making money, they're going to make them. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what they're going to do. So, you know, I can't imagine something's going to make $100 million and they're going to be like, oh, we're not interested.
Tyler Perry is a good example of that. Right. He keeps doing it because people keep watching it.
Right. And so I don't think that people... So I think that that's a big question. And I think the big question now is, was Bridesmaids... you know, proof that they can make money or was it an exception to the rule? And I think that that's, you know, that's a big question that we'll see play out over the next few years.
I have a question that kind of goes with that. Historically, those comedies are cheap. You know, Vince Vaughn is whipping them out like, you know, pastries. Jason Bateman, they're very, very cheap. It's a cheap genre. So why not, you know, put women in those and just bang them out? Like the National Lampoons, all these kind of things. There's not a lot of... They're not huge budget.
Well,
Bridesmaids was huge.
Right.
You know, not every comedy has to be that huge. I would love to see a lot of inexpensive comedies with women.
I still think they take some money and they still need the backing of the right people.
Yeah.
And you know, Judd Apatow was behind Bridesmaids, which certainly helped get you.
I was
still need a certain
that.
Degree of funding. Well, he's like, I mean, when you look at it, there were a lot of the successful women do have kind of these like very you know, these, like, male overlords who kind of help them.
I said rabbi, which is much nicer than male overlord people. Those are
the
not
overlord.
A translation.
Well, you know, male...
benefactors.
Mentors.
No, it's
too.
Like Jane
also
Austen.
Also mentors.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Mary Tyler Moore was created by men. Norman Lear was putting on, you know, Maude. I mean,
you also mentioned in your book that Tina Fey was kind of brought into Saturday Night Live
by Adam McKay.
Adam McKay, right.
So a lot of women in comedy will point to men. A lot of, you know, Richard Belzer, Richard Belzer, I cannot tell you the number of times his name came up when people would be like, oh, do you have you know, who helped you in your comedy career?
I saw
you know,
him
were
so
not
long
for
ago.
Richard Belzer, were it not for Richard Belzer, he was one of my interviews that got cut. Only because it wasn't.
How was he though? I love him so much.
He was very nice.
He's super thin and gaunt.
I mean, he's very nice, and it's funny because I really know him from Law and Order SVU.
Oh,
but
that's funny.
Well, that's his like current claim to fame. But everybody points to Richard Belzer as being like, you know, we're not for Richard Belzer. And then you also hear stories from women, you know, that there were other women who were competitive with them and then didn't want them to succeed. I mean, certain MCs who didn't give women time.
Really?
Because they were competitive.
I saw that in my little, like, scratchings around the comedy scene. And I'm nobody.
Right.
Getting boxed out by another nobody. And you're like, really, sister?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely heard stories that way. So I don't know that. I mean, I think the Boys Club, it exists, but it's not as it's a little more complicated than simply saying, you know,
I
think there's different degrees
get
of
into that.
Right.
Yeah, there's different
degrees
of Boys Club too, and that's one of the things that you experience. It's kind of like they want to have their guy fun, and they feel like they can say whatever, and
they're
not being judged by a woman.
They wouldn't know how nasty women can be.
Right. They don't know. They're kind of, and they're also kind of, in my experience, I guess, these guys also are the same guys who invite women to their shows that they're dating, or they want to date. Like, look at me and see how funny I can be, where it's like kind of a courting mechanism.
Good luck to them, because never date a comic.
Yeah. Okay. They have big
That's
heads.
What I learned.
Did you ever notice?
No,
Not the
women. The men have giant heads.
It's a good thing for film.
Yeah.
Like, physically.
Right.
Like, it's a very oversized...
Physically large head.
Not an ego.
It's
a very large face and a whole skull structure.
I don't think I ever really thought about that.
All head.
Look at Al Franken.
I don't think I ever thought of it.
I've met Al Franken. It was
very
hypnotic.
Interesting.
Oh, I saw him too. I couldn't look away. Yeah.
I got his book and he signed it for me. He was very nice. He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm an aspiring comic." I was so nervous. He's like, "Do you mean aspiring?" I'm like, "Just sign, please."
Well, you know, apparently, you know, one of the people in my book said that he used to think women weren't funny.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
Oh, look, I think a lot of people thought it back then.
Yeah, and a lot of people probably said it.
Right.
Now,
well, that's the
thing. At least they know.
That's right. Well, that's my point, is that now people are a little savvier about what you can and can't say, but it doesn't mean that the sentiment is gone.
Yes.
That's what was, I think...
The beauty of bigotry of any kind.
Well,
right?
But I'm saying that's what was at least, you know, useful about the Christopher Hitchens piece, was at least he had the balls to say what people were saying behind the scenes. Although he does make exceptions in his piece for people who, I think what he says in the piece is...
Doesn't every kind of chauvinist?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but he basically says in the piece, you know, I'm not saying that there aren't any funny women comedians... It's just that when you look at it, most of them are either, and this is his quote, hefty, dykey, or Jewish, or a combination of the three.
That's a nice combination of comedy, in my mind, from what I've seen. I have some hefty, dykey, Jewish comedic friends who are pretty funny and doing well.
Yeah. And they're women.
And they're women. Yeah. Yes.
Well, also, you know, when you see a lot of people getting into the comedy scene, and just like in writing and just like in anything creative, right. When you attempt, your first attempts are often just... basically a replica of what you admire. So your acts are not your acts. They're just imitations.
I did Lenny Bruce for like 2 years.
Right. So that's what you see a lot. And you're going to get a lot of the same material, a lot of the same jokes. And when you're in the scene for a while, and I mean, in my experience, yet again, I'm trying to speak for you.
No, it's because, well, Katie has more improv background.
Right, and sketch.
I have more just shooting my mouth off of the stand-up mic.
Right.
And one-woman shows.
So, you know, when these guys joke around and they're newer to the scene, and you've already heard this material, you've heard the masturbation jokes over and over.
You've heard my girlfriend's a bitch.
You heard all these jokes, and you're just like, well, I've heard these, and you're not laughing, not just because... They're not that funny, but they're really overdone, and they don't realize that they're doing ancient material.
Right. But they don't get called out for all being the same thing.
Right. No, you say one thing about your period, and it's like you never... Right. This is my big complaint was, if when you stop talking about your dick, I will stop talking about my period.
You know what's funny? People have asked me about that, and my feeling is, so what if you're talking about your period?
Why not?
50% of the population gets their period, and it's... And it was funny because there was a documentary recently that just came out. It just came out. I don't even know if it's out yet, but I saw that at a screening at the New York Comedy Festival. And they were...
A heavily women event.
It was called... Right. It was called... The documentary is called Women Aren't Funny, and it's kind of a spoof on it. And they interview comedians, and one of the comedians is Chelsea Peretti, who's also in the book. But
I've seen her.
Yeah, she's funny. Yeah. And on the... documentary, she says, I wish I could remember the exact phrasing, and I'm going to butcher it a little bit, but she basically says, could you imagine if men had blood coming out of their penises once a month? They'd be talking about it like all the time. They would not stop.
Their penises aren't that exciting right now, and they won't shut up.
Well, and she, that's what, however she said it, it was so funny, and it was so true. So my feeling is if women talk about their periods, so what? The truth of the matter is, it's not like, until recently, it wasn't like you saw, unless you went to a comedy club, it wasn't like you were turning on TV and seeing... Women talking about their periods, and this is a recent phenomenon.
Now you see, I just saw
a
commercial.
You heard PMS, but not actual period.
Yeah. I just saw a commercial recently that actually said your period. And, like, I'm usually not that sensitive, but I thought, wow, when I was a little girl, they wouldn't even say time of month. It was just, like, some flowers and a piece of tissue.
Product, and that's it.
And then this weird tissue, like a product, you don't even know what it is, and then the next ad. Now they're actually talking about it.
Right.
But there's just something about maybe, it's like people don't want to hear about other people's experiences.
That's the thing, it's the lack of
directly,
empathy.
Relate to their penis.
I guess that's the thing. So women can find men funny because they can say, maybe that didn't happen to me, but let me imagine if it happened to me. I can relate to this, or I can imagine, you know. And I don't think guys will do that. They don't go back the other way. They don't say, well, yeah, if I was bleeding out of my Johnson, how would that feel every month?
And also Sarah Silverman in her book told an anecdote once about on her show on Comedy Central, she wanted to use, and I really can't remember what the word is, I'm not just not saying it, but she wanted to refer to a particular female body part. It wasn't the vagina, but it was some, it might have been labia, but I don't know.
It's a funny word, labia.
Yeah. But I don't know if it was, whatever it was, maybe it was vagina, because it was years ago.
You know, when vagina was
A network censor basically came and said, you can't say that. And it was a woman. She was like, you can't say that. And Sarah Silverman was like, how come I can say the word penis on TV? And, you know, there was a general feeling that you can say certain men, you know, things about the male anatomy on TV that you couldn't say about the female anatomy.
Well, if you, just if made you people say it's kind of like
I wish
Candy
I could remember
Man.
The exact.
If you say labia three times, one appears.
Right.
And kills everybody in the room. That's just the double entendre we killed
right,
with our labias.
Right. But wait, did you want to hear why men don't think? Or
yeah,
let's why
oh, yeah.
talk
about
it. Because
yeah.
also, when there are women who think women aren't funny,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's another.
That's like
another
a whole different group.
Bring them to
me. But my general feeling is just for a long time, you know, being funny is not considered an attractive quality in a woman. And so I think that there, it's not that women weren't funny or that women didn't express it, but they weren't necessarily, you know, you might be funny among a group of women, but you're not necessarily going to do it in front of the opposite sex. And I do think that there was, if you're before the era of being, of working and, you know, making yourself into a full person and your goal is to attract another person, you're gonna temper it a little bit. I mean, to this day they tell you to like temper your personality
absolutely.
When you're dating.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that men don't like aggressive, men don't like this, and joke telling is considered a very
aggressive
form of comedy. And in the book, Lily Tomlin does tell a story about how there was this young ingenue playing, a boring role on stage, and behind the curtain mm-hmm. she was very funny, and she said, oh, you're very funny, you should do that. And the woman was like, oh my, how could you say that?
Why would you curse me?
Why, you know, and then she like kind of stiffened when she was told that she was funny. And I do think that there was, and Louise Lasser says it, that, you know, that Woody Allen had told her, you know, you're very funny, and she was like, how could you say that to me? That's just totally grotesque.
If he said that to me, I could die.
Yeah.
That would be the last thing I'd
ever need
to
hear. Want to be told that you're funny by Woody Allen.
I'm telling you.
But she didn't want to be told that. So I think that there were, because of those social conventions, that it did restrict a lot of women. And so and
you
because
wanted
of
to be
that,
seen
you know,
as attractive. You wanted to be seen as
right,
somebody
you
want,
right. You don't want to be, you know, with,
no,
right. And also,
that,
you know, men want, when men say they want a funny sense of humor, they usually mean like they want a woman who laughs at their jokes.
That's
and
right.
The funny thing is, I'm reading Age
that's
of Innocence right now, and like there's literally a line in there right now that he wanted a good sense of humor, but that meant laughing at his jokes.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was like,
that's
I mean, these
so
are
true.
Old ideas.
I think one of the problems is every guy thinks they're funny because we're trained to laugh at them.
Right.
And obviously that didn't work out for me. I don't know about you.
No.
But, I was just kind of like, and they're used to it. They
right.
all think, I've never dated a guy who didn't think he was a good dresser and had a great sense of humor.
Yeah, so they're the focal
neither
point.
Were true.
We're supposed
right.
to look at them.
Neither were true.
They don't really see some of these men that have this opinion don't see women as a full person.
Right.
And actually the men who do find a lot of women funny aren't really secure in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're not threatened by it.
Right.
You know, I dated a guy years ago. I was
not that long ago. Sorry.
When I did a sketch and improv, and I was in my 20s. And
In Aspen.
And he was a cocktail waiter at the club. And we dated. And
that's like the opposite.
That's
yeah,
like, yeah, that's
like where'd you meet her? She was on stage. I was serving drinks.
And after a while, he couldn't date me anymore because he was afraid that I would say things on
right.
stage about him.
Right.
And he was so afraid. And I wasn't that kind of a person. And
right.
it wasn't my act either. And
yeah, you're doing improv.
I'm doing it, and I'm doing sketch. I wasn't going to come up with material. And I wouldn't.
Right.
I just wouldn't do that with somebody else's.
Right. Half of my act was ex-boyfriend. So it's legitimate, gentlemen, if you're listening. You might get in my act.
So
if you have a time machine.
He liked me, but he couldn't. He
right.
was too. He just couldn't.
The funny was too
it.
Much.
And then after we broke up, he brought his new girlfriend over to meet me. Came to my apartment. Was like, this is, like, but he was like, this is Katie, the one I told you about.
Crack a
like,
joke.
Like, but
was
that's
she funny?
Kind of, I have no idea. One other thing I just wanted to say was that these guys that in comedy who are saying the other women writers and performers aren't as funny, well, then that's their job to be professional and work with them anyway.
That's
even
not
going to
happen.
Yeah.
Well, Susie Essman's said
she
that.
She cracks me up.
Yeah, she said that it was never the good comedians who said it. It
of
was
course.
Always the mediocre
yeah.
comedians.
Yes.
It was always the guys who weren't funny who were saying women weren't funny.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Said. Why not? Why not blame you for me not being funny?
And then also, you know, when you look at it, a lot of gay men have found women funny over the years. And a lot of, you know, Phil Stiller had a gay audience.
They're our friends.
Joan Rivers had a gay audience. Yeah. You know, they show up to the female shows. And you know, I think, you know, and so I think they've been a very important group in the emergence of female comics.
I mean, I think that they
went to a lot of those shows.
That if you are as minorities, as women, people of color, sexual minorities, whatever, you'll find if you're going to an all male show, someone's going to shout you out.
Right.
Like there's going to be some homophobia, some anti-Semitism, some, you know, chauvin. There's going to be something. If you're a gay man and you go to a woman's show, the chances of that happening, because a female show is usually attuned.
Let's say, and I'll couch it here, but if they're not, you know, if let's just say that they're not attracted to women in the same way that straight men are.
Sure.
That they Hopefully. Don't have that same barrier of needing to see a woman in a particular way to find her attractive. And so that lens is
not there.
So now they're
just looking for some good comedy.
They're just looking, they don't see it through the same lens. You know, they don't, they're not
as the straight guy.
Right.
If people are looking for you, where can they find you?
Find me on Twitter.
Okay. What's your Twitter handle?
It's at Yael Cohen.
Great. And thanks so much for coming in today. We had a great time. Katie, do you want to say anything? This is actually, Katie set this one up, so I have to thank Katie for bringing
it. No, and thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
It was great.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's it. Cool. Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
And we'll send you an official Hey You Know It shot glass as a token of our appreciation. As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows. And yes, you will receive an official Hey You Know It shot glass as well.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com. Thanks.
As a group until the 1970s, and really famous ones until the 1980s.
Yeah.
So, you know, you basically have the 80s, the 90s, and the...
So we're fresh.
And the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s to kind of like as one group. So I feel like, you know, and I don't think that all men don't think women are funny. I think there are women, there are men out there who do think women are funny. I mean, you know, whether they think of them as an exception or not, I mean, I don't know. I can't speak for all men. I don't know.